This is the Medicast, July 9th, 2007.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the Podmedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to the Medicast, episode 74. I'm Jamie Davis, the Podmedic, and I'd like to welcome all of you to this podcast. You may have noticed my voice is sounding a bit hoarse tonight, so we're going to see how I do on the show. I've been battling a bit of laryngitis. It's actually a lot better now than it was back on Wednesday, the 4th of July. I woke up that morning and absolutely could not talk. I mean, I was trying to get my kids' attention, and all I could do was croak out a whisper. So it's better than it was, but it's taken some time to get past me. So bear with me here. We'll get through the show as best we can. If you're a brand new listener to the Medicast, I want to welcome you to the show. Stick around, check out a few episodes, head on over to the website at medicast.com and check out all of the information over there, both the blog posts that go up midweek and the show notes links to everything that gets talked about here at the Medicast, as well as all of the other great information over there at the site. And of course, if you're a long-term listener, I want to thank you all for contributing to the show, for making the Medicast the community effort that it is and the purveyor of good information. And we'll talk a little bit more about what that means because I've got some additional information to add to last week's Med of the Week, and so I'm going to include that in this week's Med of the Week. So stay tuned for that. As I said, it's episode 74, and that means that we're right up on episode 75, of course, and I will be giving away a brand new iPod Shuffle to a lucky listener and subscriber to the Medicast newsletter. So if you haven't done so already, you've got another week or so to get on over to the website, and in the upper right-hand corner, there's a link there to subscribe to the Medicast newsletter. That's the best way I can think of to give away something. Anybody on that list as of next Saturday will be able to be entered into the drawing for the iPod Shuffle. What I do is I just use a random number generator to come up with the number of the subscriber on that list that will be the lucky winner. And I'll send you an email and you can send me your contact information where I can mail that iPod Shuffle. And this is just a thanks to all of you, kind of a way for me to give back a little bit to the listeners. And thank you all for helping to support the show, for supporting the advertisers, and all of the things you do. And 75 episodes is a great accomplishment because I guess about a year and a half ago, when I first started putting the show together, I was really just not thinking that I'd still be around. I wanted to be, but I wasn't sure what the reception was going to be by you all, the listeners. And I must say, I'm gratified by all the emails and comments that I've gotten over the preceding year and a half that has encouraged me to continue, that has thanked me for helping you all. And I just wanted to let you know that in the process, you all have helped me out a great deal as well. All of the information and comments and, yes, corrections of the information that I put out here on the show has all been very welcome, and I do appreciate that. So stay tuned next week. We'll see who is the lucky winner of the iPod Shuffle. And if you want to be in on that drawing, there's not that many people on the list that you wouldn't have decent odds if you get on over there and try out the Medicast newsletter. It's a newsletter where you get the show notes links sent directly to you every week when a new show is posted. And that email list is private. I don't share it with anybody else. It doesn't belong to anybody but me here at the Medicast. And that means your information is safe with me. But it's a way for me to keep in touch with you, the listeners, in a more direct way. And you can expect maybe 4 or 5 emails from that list a month and no more. So thanks a lot. And we'll move right on into the meat of the show. That means I think it's time to jump right on into this week's listener emails. And the first one comes from a good friend of the show, Rick Rosati from the Mitigation Journal podcast. And Rick is sending me some information about a reported emergency department waiting room death in Rochester, New York. And I looked at the article he sent. Apparently, a patient who had been triaged by the nurses there and was waiting to be seen by the ED physician in the waiting room was found to be dead sometime after they had been sent out to the waiting room. And there were people present in the waiting room, but there are no more circumstances available surrounding this death. So he promised that he'd get me some more information as it came to light. But we'll have to look into this. It's strange that this cropped up so soon after the case I reported on in LA. And Rick, thanks for sending me that. You can check out the links to Rick's excellent podcast over on the Medicast site in the left-hand side. If you scroll down to the blog links, you'll find links to Rick's podcast there. I got an email from listener Daniel, who is just getting ready to start his EMTB training in the middle of July and was looking to become nationally certified at the end of that process, and was asking me what he thought I could give him in the way of advice that would help him to become better prepared to pass the class and pass that process. And, you know, I mean, I guess the obvious answer to that, of course, Daniel, is that if you're a brand new EMT student, listening to the Medicast, I think, is a great start. At least it's going to keep you up to date on news, and there's certainly a lot of resources and training availability over at the site if you want to look up a specific topic. There's the list of tips and tricks, the list of meds. There's all kinds of medications there, including most, if not all, of the BLS, typical BLS drugs, as well as many of the National Registry BLS skill sheets. And I'll be probably covering another one or two before you finish your class here in July and August. So that's the first thing, and I guess the most obvious plug I'd give for what I try to do here on the show. And I hope that it is going to solve some of the problems for you. But again, you know, studying and working hard, at least reviewing the chapter you're going to be covering in the next class before the class starts. And I don't mean necessarily reading the thing if you don't have time to do that, although that certainly helps. But at least reviewing the objectives at the front of each chapter and maybe skimming through it and catching the highlights of the sections that are available in there so you know what your instructor is likely to be covering. Then you will know better what to look for when you go back to review after the class, when you're looking at your notes and reviewing your chapter and your textbooks. And the other side of this is there's really no substitute for just practicing your skills and practicing your assessment techniques. And you can do this with your friends, with your girlfriends, whoever you've got out there that is available to you to assess. And it may be younger or older siblings, significant others, parents, grandparents, whoever you've got. Practice your blood pressures, practice your assessment techniques, practice listening to breath sounds and going through the process so that you develop that muscle memory of what you're doing. That way, when you go into your testing situations, you'll be that much more relaxed because some of the parts of the process will at least in some way seem more natural to you. So that's my advice. Daniel, keep in touch. I'd love to know how your class is going. And anybody else out there is taking a class, if you're coming up on something, you know, if you give me a week or two notice, I usually can try to squeeze something about it into the show, at least in some way, to help you out. If not, I'll shoot you an email back and give you some insights on where else to look for assistance. So, Daniel, good luck to you, and I appreciate your email greatly. The next email is actually from a comment link on last week's episode. I had talked about a listener email questioning me about anything I had heard about methamphetamines being mixed and put into pixie sticks that would be found sold on the street and maybe found and used by children. And I had said at the time that I really hadn't heard anything, but that it sounded to me a bit like a typical internet scare or internet hoax that might be spread around by email. This comment was put up on the site, and you can check it out in more depth yourself, that said from listener Jennifer, who said that there was a report that she had found that this might be related to a story about meth being mixed with sugary substances to make it more palatable, and was being marketed and called on the street by names like Strawberry Quick, Pop-Tarts, or Pop Rocks. So this is something that she had heard about from EMS providers that are friends of hers in the Midwest and Southwest, but she had not heard about it directly in the East Coast. And, you know, that's true. Methamphetamines is more of a West Coast phenomenon, although it is traveling rapidly into all parts of the country. Although we have some issues with it here in my area, we have not really had the type of epidemic problems that have been seen elsewhere in the country. So I may not be aware of it simply because it's not present in my region. And Jennifer, I thank you for sending that information in. Head on over to the last week's show notes from last week's episode, and you'll find more information on that link that she placed up in the show notes comments. I also got an email from another listener who is in EMT class right now as an EMTB student, and she was wondering about why there were so many EMS providers and other healthcare workers out there who smoked and seemed to be making poor healthy lifestyle choices. And specifically, a statement by her EMT instructor who told the entire class that if they wanted to eat healthily as an EMS provider, they should just give on that now. You know, and I took some issue with that because I think that this is not really the type of front we want to be putting out there for new students and for the public in general. And I, too, am often shocked by the number of people who don't maintain a more healthy lifestyle, especially those who smoke, when we commonly see the effects of smoking in the COPD patients and the drastic loss of quality of life that is presented in their cases. So I'm going to do a little bit more about talking about healthy lifestyle and try to focus on some ways that we can eat healthier in the field, eat and act and go through making better lifestyle choices despite our hectic daily routines that we may find ourselves in as EMS providers. So I'm going to be working on that and trying to at least put up an article or so a week about healthy food choices, eating on the go, how to exercise in between other daily activities, things like that. And I'll see how that comes out. At least for the rest of the summer, we can do more to make ourselves better patients for our own healthcare providers and have a longer and healthier life and career as a result of it. Finally, I got a response back from our friend Eric over at the EMS Haiku blog. And Eric was checking back in about the information I had available last week on the drug Traclear and possible interactions with nitroglycerin. And he wanted to find more information on that and was unable to. And it prompted me to get some more information back from listener Valerie, who originally sent that information in. Last week's drug of the week had to do with medications that were similar to the erectile dysfunction drugs like Viagra and Cialis and such, and some of their derivatives that, like Traclear, that were also used to treat pulmonary hypertension. And so I'm going to revisit that topic a little more directly by talking about the drug Traclear specifically tonight in the Med of the Week. And Eric, thanks for checking back in with me. I hope this will help give you some of the information you were looking for. And I want to thank Valerie again for getting back to me with some more direct information as well. And that's going to wrap up this week's Listener Mail. Okay, it's time for this week's news, and I'm going to lead off with a little bit of a sad story. A Wilton paramedic in Maine was killed in an early morning ambulance accident when the ambulance he was riding in collided with a pickup truck at an intersection at about 3 a.m. The paramedic, Alan Parsons, age 46, was tending to a patient in the back of his ambulance en route to an area hospital when the ambulance allegedly collided with a pickup truck crossing its path. The ambulance did reportedly have lights and siren engaged and collided with the pickup truck in the early morning. The driver of the truck was ejected from his vehicle, and the patient in the ambulance, and as well as the driver and the paramedic in the back, were all taken to area hospitals, and the paramedic, unfortunately, in the back died. So I want to send out our thoughts and prayers to the families and colleagues of Mr. Parsons, and I want to let them know that we're thinking about them at this time, and encourage all of us to do what we can to engage in more safety awareness when transporting patients. Do what we can to use whatever safety procedures we can while riding in the back. And that's a topic we'll cover in another episode. Moving along, have you been fit tested for your respirator that you should be receiving or should have received, possibly through a Homeland Security grant? Well, a lot of places have been getting these respirators, but not many people have actually undergone the appropriate safety and health training that goes along with them. However, Warren County, New Jersey emergency medical providers have at least in part participated in training for respiratory protection programs, and fit testers and administrators have come in from the New Jersey Department of Health and Senior Services to provide this program for these providers. The program will find and properly fit respirators to emergency medical providers and responders to protect them from patients with infectious illnesses and other airborne problems, diseases like tuberculosis, SARS, and of course, pandemic influenza are all diseases that can be at least partially protected from by using these respirators. So check with your supervisors if you don't have one or haven't at least gone through a regular process of learning how to fit these devices safely so that they do provide the protection they're supposed to. I talked a little bit earlier about providing some healthy living tips as part of the Medicast line of services. And one of those things is going to show up right here in a news item that I found this week. And it talks about improving your health with 8 summer steps for healthy living. Now, it's in the women's health section of the WebMD.com site. But you know what? I think that these tips, at least in part, can be used by any and all of us. First of all, you want to give your diet a berry boost. Berries are rich in antioxidants and can be great ways to provide us with vitamins, minerals, and necessary nutrients. And also, you know, they taste good too. Also, remember to get dirty and stress less. Get out there and do stuff outside. Get out of the house and do things like gardening, or get out and do stuff in the soil, or engage in some outdoor sports. Get dirty and get rid of some of that stress. Also, remember to floss daily. A great way to alleviate cardiac problems, it is being found, is by getting rid of the bacteria that inhabit the gums and around the teeth. And the best way to do that is get out there and floss on a regular basis. Reducing oral bacteria will improve overall body health. You want to make sure you get outside to exercise in any way you can. Getting to the gym is not just the best way to do it. You can get out and get some fresh air, even if it's going for walks with your family or just getting outside and walking around your work building, if that's what it takes. Getting a few laps in and maybe 15 or 20 minutes of brisk walking is a great way to help you feel better and help you have a better outlook on things as well. Also, remember to protect your eyes. Wear protective eyewear, sunglasses that block at least 99% of the UV A and B rays, because this will help prevent cataracts later in life. Remember to take your vacation time and remember to enjoy that downtime. It'll help lower your blood pressure, heart rate, and your stress hormone levels, all which will increase widening waistlines and increased risk of heart disease. And the final two steps are: go light on the alcohol, and remember to get plenty of rest. So check out the website links for this article, and there's a lot more detail in there that you can check out on your own. Great steps for healthy living this summer. The final article today kind of ends on a dismal note. I'm sorry, we began on some sadness, and I think we're going to end on something that at least is partially disturbing to most of us. It has to do with a Missouri man who has been charged with the shaking baby death of his girlfriend's child and is facing a murder charge. And it has to do with an 18-year-old male who was babysitting his girlfriend's baby and was accused of shaking the baby because his incessant crying was driving him crazy. And he says he only shook the baby for 2 or 3 seconds, but prosecutors are now saying that medical evidence will show that there was substantially more shaking than that. And this is a disturbing case and leads to mind, at least for me, to wonder how we recognize these kind of things in the field. And because this ends up being a crime scene situation, what have we done to preserve evidence, either in proper writing of our reports, proper detailing of our assessment findings, and asking proper questions when illnesses, death, or injuries surround children or anybody at risk for abuse? So, this is going to lead me to think about what we need to talk about in this week's tip and trick of the week. And I guess that will wrap up the news and lead me right into this week's tip and trick. Now, I'm going to be giving you some tips and tricks on recognizing child abuse and handling child abuse cases as EMS providers. But there's really no substitute from taking a class on the subject, from getting in touch with your local social services, child protective services agencies, your local children's hospital, and getting out there and taking the PEP class, the pre-hospital education or pediatric education for pre-hospital providers. The PEP class is offered from the American Academy of Pediatrics, and it is an excellent resource for all of us out there in the EMS field. If you're a BLS provider, you'll get to practice ALS skills, which is a lot of fun, and you'll get to be able to get some of the best education out there to help us learn how to better identify problems in pediatric patients and treat them in the field. And one of the topic areas that's covered is child abuse, both abuse and neglect. So we're going to talk a little bit about things here, but there really is no substitute for going out and getting a class taught to you directly on the subject. In 2001, Child Protective Services organizations reported 5 million children as probable victims of abuse in the United States, and about a million of them were finally reported as verified or confirmed victims, with about half of those victims of neglect as the form of abuse. However, what's more discouraging to me is the statistic that every day, 3 children die from abuse or neglect in the United States. And, you know, there's just really no excuse for that. So what do we look for? What do we do in the field to help us identify? First of all, it's important to note that while children from low income or single parent families and children of younger parents have a higher incidence of child abuse and maltreatment, there is really a broad spectrum of socioeconomic classes that can be found in abuse. So just because you're responding to a family that is more well-to-do does not mean that abuse is not present. It is broadly spread across all socioeconomic groups in the spectrum. Some things you might want to look for when assessing a patient that is a child that might be suspected of abuse, or things that you might find during a child injury assessment that might lead you to suspect abuse, include the changing of the medical history or the history of the injury over time. You know, it started out as being one thing, and then somebody else comes in and gives you a different story, or the story begins to change the time frame or the actual amount of steps the child fell down, or whatever else you may be listening to. Also, was there a delay in seeking care, or was the closest source of treatment bypassed? You know, if someone was at home and they drove into a neighboring jurisdiction and then called 911, well, maybe the local 911 services already are suspicious of activities in this home and they've gone to a neighboring agency. So that may be a suspicious sign. Are there injuries of multiple ages? And this is going to be difficult to assess, but you need to look at a child, and when you're doing your assessment, maybe there's a lot of scarring or signs of pain in areas that are not associated with the current injury. It's hard to assess bruising, however. You cannot adequately stage the time frame of a bruise based on its color. And this has been proven by a study that was performed that looked at ER physicians at a pediatric trauma center where they were shown photographs of bruises and asked to identify the probable ages of the bruise. And in fact, they were wrong almost as often as they were right. And this means that even experienced pediatricians cannot adequately identify the ages of bruises based upon just looking at them. So this is something you may want to be wary of, but a child with a lot of bruising or bruising in odd places, like, you know, bruising on the knees and the shins of a child or on the elbows or the hands is may not be all that unusual because kids fall down and those are the parts of the body they run into most often. But if you see bruising across the ribs, across the back, or in the thighs or buttocks, that may be indeed signs of abuse. Also, again, do the injuries fit the patient's history or the history that you're being told? Does the patient not seek the comfort of a caregiver, or does the caregiver inappropriately respond to the patient when they seek comfort? Also, what other sibling involvements are there with both the patient and the caregiver? This involves really looking at the environment the patient's in. This may be the patient's car, or it may be that you're in their home and you are able to assess how they interact with the people and places around them. When I talk about abuse and neglect, and remember I said neglect was responsible for more than half of the confirmed cases of abuse in the country, it's important to learn the distinction. Neglect is a lack of action for the child. You know, when a parent leaves a child alone and doesn't adequately babysit them or doesn't adequately feed them or provide for adequate care, that's neglect. Actual physical abuse or sexual abuse or other abuse is actually an action against the child. So make that distinction so you understand. However, both are forms and are recognized as abuse of the child. So you need to document anything, whether it may be neglect or actual physical abuse. One of the first things you want to do when you first start suspecting abuse of a child is to make sure you're ensuring your own safety. Again, I end every show with Scene Safety BSI, and it's not just something that we say over and over again to protect ourselves from getting dinged during a test. It is a real concern that we need to keep in the back of our minds at all times when on the scene. And this is because if someone's willing to abuse their child or maybe has even killed their child, they're certainly not going to have any qualms about doing something to us if they think they can help them get away from what they're going to have happen to them when they get caught. So you want to be careful about how you interact with parents and bystanders in a situation like this. You want to make sure that you're documenting the things you overhear, but you don't want to necessarily react inappropriately to the things you overhear. And that is going to be difficult for many of us. You know, we're people that are in the community to protect and help people. And when we see the most helpless members of our community being abused or maltreated, it is difficult for some of us to stand by and do nothing. But in fact, we have to do that. We have to preserve our own safety, the safety of our crew, and preserve the safety of the crime scene so that these people can be investigated appropriately. You want to make sure you assess the child carefully and carefully document all of your findings. Document what you see around the patient in the scene, document your clinical findings during the assessment, and make sure you look at everything. Remember, when you confront a caregiver with your suspicions, you will do nothing but delay care of the patient that is in your charge at this time. So keep the suspicions in the back of your mind. Document what you think is happening in your patient care report, and take care of your patient. That is your primary responsibility. And get down to the hospital and call social services. Let the hospital know what your suspicions are. Talk to the nurse, talk to the doctors, talk to your supervisors, and let them know what you found. And get all of this information carefully documented in your patient care report. Remember that the actual assessment and identification of child abuse is not going to be something that we're going to definitely and definitively accomplish in the field unless we've heard some kind of blatant, you know, confession on the part of the caregiver responsible. And that's just not likely to happen. So we need to keep our minds and ears and eyes open and make sure that we are doing what we can to care for the patient and provide the information to the people who are professionals in this area. And that is the ER staff, the child protective services or social services people that you contact, the police agencies that may be brought into play, and making sure that we have everything documented so that these agencies can come back and review and make their assessment and then make the right determination. So it starts with us, but it will not end with us. And so we need to remember that the appropriate care of the patient is our first priority. So this is a difficult topic, again, to cover in a short time frame like this, but hopefully I've given you some ideas and some thoughts to take with you and at least begin to improve your understanding of this information. I have a link to an article over at Emergency Medical Services at emsresponder.com, and there's many other links that can be found out there. And again, I urge all of you to get out there and take the PEP class when it comes into your area. It's worth paying if you have to take this class. It's a two-day class. It's a great opportunity to get your hands on some skills opportunities, as well as learn a lot about pediatric assessment, and that will include a section on maltreatment of children. Well, the tip and trick of the week's done, and that means it's time to move right on into this week's Med of the Week. And I'm going to do a kind of a continuation of what I started to cover last week. And by starting to cover, I mean that there were some questions raised last week about a drug called Traclear, which is the also known in the generic form as Bosentan. And this drug was brought up by listener Valerie, who had run into a patient taking this medication for pulmonary arterial hypertension. And the patient was warning the paramedic that was riding with Valerie that this medication had a similar interaction with nitroglycerin as did something like Viagra or Cialis. And she was bringing this to my attention. And while I was unable to find specific information about the drug Traclear because I had a spelling issue, I was eventually able to get that information from her this week. But I did look at the medication category, which was known as PDE inhibitors. And the PDE inhibitors are the medication class that is the drugs like Cialis and Viagra falls into. And it has to do with the way that it relaxes the endothelial tissue of the smooth muscles in the vascular space and causes a dip in blood pressure. So I went and found more information on Traclear, and Eric from the EMS Haiku blog checked back in with me because he was unable to find anything specifically about an interaction with nitroglycerin. And so I wanted to kind of look at it again and give you some more specific information about the specific medication Traclear. Now that's spelled T-R-A-C-L-E-E-R. And also known as Bosentan, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, B-O-S-E-N-T-A-N. There's links to a WebMD Rx List article in the show notes, so you can check out all of this information yourself. It is a medication that is used to treat patients with pulmonary arterial hypertension by relaxing some of the vascular space and smooth muscles in the vascular space in patients that are experiencing right-sided heart failure and pulmonary hypertension. And this is usually used late in the diagnosis of this condition. In other words, this is one of the later drugs administered to patients that have had advanced problems with this condition. One of the things that was brought up about this medication when Valerie checked in was that there was a possible interaction with nitroglycerin. And so when I check out interactions with this medication, you want to look at some of the effects and things that it has. First of all, this has a box warning for its adverse effect on the liver. And for anybody that is having a liver issue, needs to really watch out being on this drug because of the way it is cleared from the body and can enhance and cause more issues with liver failure patients. One of the things, though, that showed up when you look at adverse effects from patients that are taking the drug is that during the clinical trials, hypotension did show up more frequently in patients taking this drug than the placebo, which, while there is no specific interaction warning with nitroglycerin for the drug Traclear, certainly leads me to be cautious with the administration of nitroglycerin to a patient presenting with pulmonary edema or cardiac symptoms like chest pain or onset of an acute MI. And so what I would recommend, really, as I do any time that we are giving nitroglycerin in the field, is you really need to be having that IV in place so that you can give a fluid bolus if necessary to support blood pressure. And then use nitroglycerin with caution and be prepared for that sudden drop. Be prepared to have another line ready to go if you need to start a second line to increase blood pressure. Of course, you're going to do this with caution in a patient that has pulmonary edema, but you need to use your resources at hand. If you're not sure, but you think the patient might benefit from nitroglycerin, check in with the ED, talk to your ED physician on your med line, and check with them and see what they say. Tell them that the patient is taking the drug Traclear, that the patient is having chest pain symptoms or whatever symptoms your protocols are having you treat with nitroglycerin, and ask them what they would like you to do. Advise them that you are prepared to deal with a sudden drop in blood pressure and that you think that the nitroglycerin may be indicated, but you want to check with them because of the possible drug interaction. Let them make the call. Again, this is one of those things we need to kind of be aware of. There's so many new drugs that come out on the market all the time. And remember that we're dealing with patients in an emergency situation, and being aware of the side effects of any medication that we give will help us be more prepared to deal with those side effects when they show up. So we should always be keeping side effects of meds in the back of our mind, no matter what drugs the patient is taking. Because often, remember, they could be taking a drug and we just don't know about it. So that's a little bit about Traclear and just kind of a follow-up and addition to last week's Med of the Week. And as you can hear, my voice is going steadily downhill. So I think we'll just wrap up this week's episode right here. As always, I want to thank everybody for checking out the show and for supporting the Medicast in all of the wonderful ways that you do, both by checking in here and leaving comments on the website at www.medicast.com. Also, by contacting me more directly here by email at podmedic@mac.com. And also over at the voicemail line, you can call me on the voicemail line, leave a message with your comments at 941-306-3342. That's 941-30-MEDIC. And if you're listening to the show and you're thinking of a question and you want to check out and get a hold of me right away and you forget the phone number, don't forget that if you're listening on an iPod with a screen, you can click the center button a couple of times till you get to the description of the show that comes along with every download. And actually, at the bottom of that description, I include the voicemail and email address there as well. So you can always get a hold of me directly while you're riding along in the middle of the day and listening to the show by checking out the voicemail line and calling in directly to me while you have the question fresh in your mind. I will wrap up, as I always do, with some excellent PodSafe music. This is a repeat artist again this week. A listener called in and wanted to hear a repeat of Matthew Ebel's song, Wasting My Time. You know, I thought that was a good song for us to listen to this summer, as we all try to waste a little bit of our time as the good weather is present. So I will lead in here with Matthew's song. If you like what you hear, head over to Matthew's website, link in the show notes, and let him know you heard his song here on the Medicast. And if you like it a whole lot and want to pick it up for yourself, you can click on the iTunes button there and pick it up and purchase it directly at the iTunes store just for yourself. So without further ado, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. Until next time, scene safety, BSI.
How can you love me when you don't know who I am? These pages got a lot more feeling from a bloodstained hand, and all I know is I was blind and the view looked mighty grand. I've been a white devil, a holy roller, a balkan honest and a loner with a temper and a cold shoulder. I just keep wasting my just to bleed. She knows that I've been trying hard to take my leave. She likes guns and she makes love like a lighthouse body, like poison in a sundress. Baby, I'm wasting my time. Wasting my time again and again. I get so used to these crimes, but it wears kind of thin. I won't keep wasting my skin.